Hi, and welcome back to the Beyond the Peloton podcast. I'm the host, Spencer Martin, and we're doing an emergency podcast and of the Dauphiné Libéré, Critérium du Dauphiné, and a quick preview of Giro di Lombardia, or Il Lombardia, in which we're just going to keep it short today. I didn't have time or hadn't done the prep when I recorded the last podcast to do a proper preview of Lombardia, so we're just going to go over that really quickly, and then since we've talked, stages 1, 2, and 3 of the Critérium du Dauphiné have happened, so we can do a quick review of that. And long story short, Ineos looks terrible. Lotto Jumbo, or Jumbo Visma, looks incredible, and we'll just discuss that really quickly. But up top, you can support the podcast by buying me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/BTPpod, and thank you for everyone who's done that so far. And we also have a newsletter, so you can sign up for that at beyondthepeloton.substack.com. So if you want even more information, be sure to do that. A lot of good stuff that we kind of that gets glossed over in the podcast that I can cover over there. So if it's a nice supplement to this. So just let's start with just a quick recap of Critérium du Dauphiné, stages 1, 2, 3. And so every stage has been, I think I talked about stage 1 on the last episode. It was kind of like a tough sprint stage. Wout van Aert won. No, I didn't talk about this. Yeah, I was saying Wout van Aert was going to enter domestique mode. And then he goes on and wins the first stage of the Critérium du Dauphiné. So super impressive. I didn't see that coming. I mean, that's like shows how much confidence that team has that they can go into a stage race, a 5-day stage race, trying to win it and just afford to gift a win, a stage win to one of their domestiques. And he looks incredible right now. Like one of the best 1-day / sprint / climber riders, or like punchers, in the world. And then so stage two, three, four, and five happening on Thursday, Friday, which is today, Saturday, and Sunday are all uphill finishes. Roglic won stage two, and what's interesting about this is Ineos grabbed control of the race at bottom of the final climb. It looks like, oh, the Sky Train is back. They're just going to ride everyone off their wheels. But it's like a scarecrow version of the team. Like everything looks right, but there's just no substance there. Mikhail Kwiatkowski was on the front, and he actually dropped Chris Froome before he could take a turn, which is not what you want there. And then by 3.7K to go on the climb, Geraint Thomas is the last worker. He's on the front, but he drops himself by 2.8K to go. Like he probably needs to hold on until 2K to go. But, I'm wrong. So there's Pavel Sivakov is also left. So at 2.8K to go, it's Sivakov and Bernal. But at this point, Ineos has gone from like a full suite of 7 riders versus Jumbo's 4, or Jumbo had 3. Tom Dumoulin got caught behind a crash, caught back on. I saw some chatter on Twitter that he was dropped. I don't think that's true. I think he got caught behind a crash before the climb, rode back on, but was hurting from that effort and just kind of hanging on. It's 7-3 and then 7-4. But then Ineos just keeps, these riders just keep popping off. So with 2.8K to go, there's actually 3 Jumbo riders versus 2 Ineos. So they've neutralized and then reversed their entire advantage. And then by, let's say like 1.5K to go, Bernal's by himself and he kind of puts in a little attack and then shakes his head. You could tell he's really like frustrated or upset with the whole situation. But I mean, that's not what you want. If you're like, quote unquote, the strongest team in the world, you shouldn't be isolating your leader at the end of a race like this. And then Primoz Roglic in the final kilometer, he just like, it was just a seated attack. And just motored away from everyone. It was really impressive. He looks like heads and shoulders, the strongest rider in the world right now. But interesting note, Thibaut Pinot got second. He looked really strong. But we talked about Pinot in the first episode. I love him. One of my favorite riders. Would love to bet on him for the tour this year, but he just always has a bad day in a grand tour. So I wouldn't get too excited. Note it, don't get too excited. Actually, a professional runner / friend / neighbor last year asked me during the tour, like, well, couldn't someone just sit on the Ineos train in the mountains and then profit from it? And the answer is like, yes, absolutely. But when they've just always been the strongest riders, so no one can do that. But that's exactly what happened on this stage. Roglic, his team didn't have to do anything. They just sat on Ineos, who did all the work. And then when they were cooked, it just was like this perfect slingshot for Roglic. So it's like they did all, like, that's the problem they're going to keep running into between now and the end of the tour, is if you don't have the strongest rider in the race, that tactic doesn't work because you're just working for the strongest rider and helping him out. You're keeping the pace high so no one can attack, protecting him. He just has to sit on the wheel. And then you've cooked everyone by the last few Ks of the climb, and then he can just ride away. Or, yeah, everyone's in the hurt box by then, and it works out perfectly for him. So it's like they've got to come up with a new strategy fast. Like, they can't race like they're still the strongest team when they're not. And I did say in the last episode that Froome, he looked pretty strong at Tour de Lan, but so he couldn't do a turn. But we should also remember, I mean, it's not like Froome is like the first rider dropped every race, every stage for Ineos. Like, he's like last three or four riders. So, I mean, he's not where he needs to be. He couldn't do a turn on stage two. On stage three, which was today, he got dropped at the beginning of the last climb. So he couldn't really do anything. That's a problem. You would think, like, there's a chance he doesn't get selected for the tour now. I'm just not sure who Ineos would select, you know, to take his place. There's not an obvious choice there to me. But definitely my confidence that he was going to the tour the last episode is starting to wane this episode. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets left behind. But one thing I want to note is, so there's a lot of Twitter chatter and a lot of journalists saying, well, I mean, we're so far from the last week at the Tour de France. The first real mountain stage is 4 weeks away. This is, like, to me, a fundamental misunderstanding of how the Tour de France is won. A, the first Tour de France mountain stage is on stage two. So we're, you know, I think we're by the time the Dauphiné ends, we're 2 weeks away from that. So that's not enough time to get in shape. And also, the winner of the Tour de France usually, A, wins the Dauphiné, or B, has a decent showing. I think Chris Froome won it 3 out of the 4 years he's won the Tour, and the year he didn't win, he got fourth. So, respectable finish. Bradley Wiggins won it the year he won the Tour. Vincenzo Nibali, the year he won in 2014, he was, I believe, in the top. He was at least in the top five. Maybe he was seventh overall, but it was respectable. I mean, if we just look at the GC right now, the Dauphiné, Ineos, Egan Bernal's the best placed rider in 31 seconds down. I mean, not terrible. He got dropped at the end of the stage today. And then we have Geraint Thomas is 7 minutes back. Chris Froome is close to 30 minutes back. Like, that's just not how, in this year, it's even more important than normal because it's closer to the Tour than it usually is. So there's just not enough time. There's no historical precedent for someone just being that out of shape before the Tour and then winning it in recent memory. And then a lot of people are saying, oh, well, Ineos is playing possum. They're going to peak in the third week, and they're going to do what Chris Froome did in the Giro d'Italia in 2018 and just ride away and get 7 minutes in the third week. That's not how the Tour de France is won. If we go back, if we look from 2019 to 2011. In 2018, Geraint Thomas got the jersey and the leader's jersey, stage 11, won the race. 2017, Chris Froome gets it, stage 14, wins the race. 2016, Chris Froome gets it, stage 8, wins the tour. 2015, Chris Froome gets it, stage 7, wins the race. 2014, Vincenzo Nibali gets it, stage 10, wins. 2013, stage 8 is when Chris Froome gets it, goes on to win. 2012, Bradley Wiggins gets it, stage 7, goes on to win. And then so the outliers would be 2011, Cadel Evans got it in the third week, but Thomas Volkler had the jersey up until then and only had it because of great performances in the first week. 2019, Egan Bernal didn't get it until stage 19, but he got it from Julian Alaphilippe, who was only in contention because he took a bunch of time in the first week. I mean, it's clear to me looking at this that the Tour is won in the first or second week. Like, that's where the time comes from. And time is equal. It's not time gained on stage two is worth less than time gained on stage 19. But there's this misnomer of, oh, well, the third week is when it is won. It's not. It's usually defended in the third week. You have to be strong enough to hold off attacks. But that's not, you don't peak for that third week. That drives me crazy when people say that. It's just a clear blueprint that you win this race in the first week. And this first week, there's going to be a lot of time. There's going to be a lot of places to take time. There's a lot of climbs, a lot of hilly stages. If you're not ready to go on day one, you could be out the back. You could lose 10 minutes on stage two. And you're not going to come back from that. The tour is not the Giro. You can't just surprise, unless you're Floyd Landis, but we all know how Floyd did that. He was on tons of EPO. He dropped a blood bag the night before and took back a bunch of time. It's like, that's just not how the tour is won without, you know, major assistance from drugs or blood doping. So enough about that. Watch the next two stages of the Dauphiné. Keep an eye on that. I think it's just going to continue to be the Jumbo show, and Ineos is going to really continue to fumble around with this new position they find themselves in. Not being the strongest team, but still riding like they're the strongest team and just helping the stronger riders. Oh, and so one more note about the Dauphiné. So far, Emmanuel Buchmann on Bora, he's in third place. Thibaut Pinot's in second overall, 14 seconds behind Roglic. And then Buchmann is in third place, 20 seconds behind Roglic. Guillaume Martin from Cofidis is in fourth place, 24 seconds behind. Mikel Landa's 26 seconds behind. And then Nairo, a little bit disappointing, is 35 seconds down. But Buchmann performance, he looks really strong, and he's a good time trialist. Granted, there's only one time trial on the tour, but I don't think he's going to win the tour, but keep an eye. I mean, he could pull off a surprise podium. And then Martin, not going to win, but if you're looking for like a dark horse top 10 or top 5, I like him a lot. Bernal's in 7th right now. It's way too early to write him off. I mean, he could still, I know I just went on a rant about Ineos not being where it needs to be. Bernal's not where he should be. He's a little off the pace, but he's so talented, and you know, he's just right there. He could still salvage this and win the Tour de France. But right now, I'd say my two top favorites are Roglic, Bernal. Pinot would be maybe in the second tier. I don't trust him at all. And then we'll like have the riders like Buchmann. Pogacar, he's worrying me a little bit. I thought he was going to be stronger. He's over a minute down at this point. Nairo, I love Nairo. I don't see it. I think he needs to be better at the Dauphiné than he is. And Tom Dumoulin has been getting dropped at the very end of the stages, but he's doing a lot of work for the team. He's kind of where Chris Froome would need to be in contention for a tour win. If Chris Froome was where Tom Dumoulin is right now, that'd be interesting to me. I think maybe he could salvage that, where like Dumoulin's getting dropped in the last 1 or 2K of the climbs after doing a lot of work. So I've been impressed with how he's recovered after 18 months away. And Sivakov today, Pavel Sivakov on Sky, who I mentioned in the first episode being really strong, he was the top Ineos rider. He finished 39 seconds behind the winner, David Formolo. Roglic finished 33 seconds back. So if we just take that as like time zero, Sivakov was only 6 seconds behind him. So that's pretty good. But Sivakov lost a bunch of time on stage two. So there's no chance of him becoming Ineos' leader for this race. But keep an eye on him for the tour. I mean, he's not nearly as strong as Jumbo-Visma, who looks incredible right now. And one more note, Jumbo-Visma, everyone's like, oh, they're peaking too early. Roglic did this before the 2019 Giro. Well, he was like holding form from February to the end of May, which is a little bit different than holding form from August to mid-September. Like, I don't think it's possible he's overcooked. But this isn't that's not a ridiculous long time to hold form. And usually the Tour de France winner looks really sharp at the Critérium du Dauphiné. And this Dauphiné is even closer to the Tour than it normally is. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. Just block that noise out, and we'll stay on Team Roglic. And just ride that plus 550 to the riches when he wins in Paris. So let's talk about Giro di Lombardia a little bit. It's a little bit watered down this year. It's a beautiful classic. It goes from Bergamo to Como, but sometimes they run it Como to Bergamo. They've done this route where it starts in Bergamo and then kind of snakes through the Bellagio Peninsula around Lake Como for the past 4 or 5 years. This is actually the shortest. They had to cut some distance off of it. So it's like 12 kilometers shorter than it normally is. I don't think that's going to affect the race at all. But what will affect the race is it's being run during the Dauphiné. So a lot of the riders who would be in contention for this race are racing the Dauphiné. So it's going to be a little bit watered down. 50K from the finish, the climbs really start to get hard in this race. They go over the, I'm going to butcher this name. There's a really famous climb on the Bellagio Peninsula around Lake Como. It's called the Madonna del Ghisolo. It's 8.7K at 5.3% average. So not too tough. There's like a beautiful church dedicated to cycling at the top. But then, so right after that, though, they do a little descent, and then they go up this climb called Muro di Somano. And it's tough. It's 7.2K at 8.4% average, so it's really hard. But remember, we're 50K from the finish, so like a winning move is not going to go there. But then there's a really technical descent. It's flat for a little bit for, you know, maybe 10K. It's flat or just kind of bumpy. And then we start to get these two big climbs before the finish. 20K out, we have the Civgalo. It is 4K at 10%. Really tough. And then it's a really wicked descent. And then there's one more climb, the Sanferno della Patataggio, something like that. 2.9K at 6.7%. So it's like on paper, that's not crazy, but the rider's so cooked by this point, and it crests about 6K from the line, from the finish line, and then it's downhill pretty much to the finish. So riders can hold that. If they can crest that alone, they can cross the finish line alone. That's where a rider like George Bennett could win the race. And that's where I don't love Mike Woods. So if Mike Woods is in front there, I don't think he can hold off the group on that descent to win. So those are the main points of this race to keep an eye on. I mean, you should, if you're going to watch the race, 50K to go, 60K to go, maybe see that steep climb, 50K from the finish, and start watching there, and it gets really good. But before that, it is tough. I mean, there are climbs from Bergamo to Como. It's just, you don't need to watch it, but it does tire the riders out. So it is pertinent, but it's just not the most exciting thing ever. But we're just going to, I have like an open source prediction software, or it's like an algorithm that will predict winners in races. It's this guy out of Holland who writes and updates the spreadsheet. It's pretty interesting. It's not perfect. But we're going to compare that against the betting odds, and there's some interesting discrepancies. So on BetMGM, Remco Evenepoel, this is a really hilly race, by the way. It's a classic, one-day classic, but usually a climber wins it. So the last few winners have been 2019 was Bauke Mellema, 2018 Thibaut Pinot, 2017 Vincenzo Nibali, 2016 Esteban Chavez, 2015 Vincenzo Nibali. So Nibali is going to be there. Thibaut Pinot's elsewhere at Criterium. Bauke Mellema will be there. But Esteban Chavez is not the rider he was in 2016. So I wouldn't count him as winning, even if he started. So it's a really hilly classic. Remco Evenepoel is like a short Belgian superstar. He does not look like a traditional cyclist. He's super air. I mean, he is like this really natural aerodynamic position on the bike, which I think helps him a lot. But he's at plus 150. And I mean, he's riding so strong. He had a solo 50K breakaway at the Tour of Poland and then won the overall by minutes because of that. I mean, so he is riding so strong right now. I could see him winning this, but those are terrible odds for a one-day race with lots of variables. Now, if we go down, we have Jakob Fuglsang at plus 550. So this algorithm I have generates him as the winner. It says he is the most likely winner. I like those odds. I mean, it's not great, but he was so strong at Strada Bianchi. This is an even better race for him, and it's longer. So the age will help him with that distance. Remco's also very young. I think he's only 20 years old. It can be a little bit hard to win on long courses like that when you're that young. And then so third on the odds, she is this guy. I'd never heard of this guy before. His name is Alex. He's a Russian, Alexander Vlaskov. The guy is absolutely flying right now. He won. There was like a hill climb up the Mont Ventoux in Provence, and he just crushed everybody. I don't think he's going to win this race, but that's funny to me. He's jumped that high. There's a lot of nuance to win this. You have to be more than a strong climber, so I don't love him there. But he is he's riding very strong. So then we have George Bennett from Jumbo-Visma, who is looking incredible. He was really strong at the Tour de l'An, and he's at plus 1,000. So that would be an interesting pick to me. Also, I should just preface this. This is an insane race to bet on, with Remco being so strong and having such poor odds as the favorite. He would be who I want to bet on, but I don't. That's just too expensive. I don't think I could bet on him at plus 150, but he just moved to plus 140 as I'm speaking. And Bennett actually moved down to plus 1,200, so I like that even more. So yeah, Remco's just so strong. Take a crazy person to bet against him, which is why we're seeing the odds move in real time. But I'd be surprised if he won. And then we have Nibali at plus 1,400. He's getting older, but he's so good at this race. That's not a terrible bet. Bauke Mellema, his teammate, at plus 1,800. I'd be surprised if Mellema repeated. I wouldn't bet on him. Diego Ulisi at plus 1,800. I don't think so. It's a little too tough for him. And then we have a really interesting one, Max Shackman at plus 2,500. I love that. So that this algorithm I have has him generated as the second most likely winner. I think that's a really good bet. If I was going to bet on anyone for this race, it'd be Shackman. Those are great odds. We saw he was so strong at Strada Bianchi, and this race is even better for him. So he was stronger than Jakob Fuglsang, who is second on the odds board. To me, that's like a total, almost like a mistake in the betting odds, and I would try to take advantage of that. And so we have Matthew Vanderpoel at plus 3,300, which is about where he should be. I'd be shocked if he won this race. He is like a big Northern Classics rider, and this is way too much climb for him. But this algorithm has him as the 10th most likely winner. I think that's overrated. I think that's overrated him. And we've seen he doesn't have the form he had last year. So I don't love him there. Other riders of note, Johnny Moscon at plus 5,000. He's been okay at this race before. We saw him at the base of the Poggio at Milano Sanremo. He looked okay. I mean, if he was really strong, he would have played a factor at the end of that race. Mike Woods at plus 5,000. The Canadian, he broke his femur earlier this year. It's the only reason I don't really love him for this. He has proved he's got some form, though. Now, it's not a terrible pick. Woods is not a very good descender. He came over from running track, so he's kind of behind everybody with technical skill, but he's really strong. I mean, this type of course is good for him. If he can get down those descents with everyone, he could win the race. And plus 5,000, those are great odds. And then another one I want to call it is Ben Hermans at plus 6,600. He's quite strong. He's never won a race like this, but if a dark horse was going to win, I think it'd be him. So just wanted to note that. I don't want to get too much in this race. It's really watered down with being butting up against the Dauphiné. So I don't want to talk about it too much, but I just wanted to give people an overview of who the likely winners are going to be and give you some betting guidance. So that's it for this week. I just wanted to do a quick episode. Please rate and review me on iTunes or on Apple Podcasts. If you like the show, it helps other people find it. Share the podcast if you enjoy it and you think a friend would. And let's have a great weekend of racing, and I'll be putting out a new podcast early next week. And check out the newsletter at beyondthepeloton.substack.com. All right, thank you. Bye.